moxie, force of character, determination, or nerve. I'm Sierra Benson, and you're listening to The Moxie Mindset. This podcast is designed to help you grow a healthier, growth-oriented mindset. I've reached out to college professors and professionals who have agreed to come into the studio to help us learn more in depth about the communication and leadership skills we need to succeed. Thank you for joining us on The Moxie Mindset. I'm super stoked for today's episode. Noel Cockett became Utah State University's 16th president in January 2017. Cockett has built a distinguished career in sheep genomics research, maintaining an active research program even while serving in various leadership positions at USU. Her research program has centered on the identification of genetic markers associated with economically important traits in sheep, as well as the development of resources that advance research on the sheep genome. As an active researcher, Cockett has received many awards and accolades throughout her career, including a Young Scientist Award from the Western Section of the American Society of Animal Science, the Utah Governor's Medal for Science and Technology, and one of USU's top honors, the D. Wynn Thorne Research Award. Since beginning her tenure as president, Cockett has prioritized diversity and inclusion throughout the USU campus system. She is instrumental in creating the Latinx Cultural Center, developing hosting an annual Inclusive Excellence Symposium, investing in the USU Inclusion Center, creating a Center for Intersectional Gender Studies and Research, and facilitating a new community campus partnership in the annual Community Diversity Dinner. Cockett grew up on a beef cattle ranch in eastern Montana and is married to John Cockett, AVP of Central Development in University Advancement and Director of Technology in USU's Emma Eccles Jones College of Education and Human Services. Noel and John have two children, Dylan and Chantel. I'm really excited about this. I just kind of want to have you introduce yourself, a little bit of your background. I know that you grew up on a ranch in Montana, and I love that story because I grew up on a farm in Idaho, and I know that kind of work ethic that it instills in you. Yes. Yeah, could you tell us just a little bit of your story for the listeners who haven't read about you?
Well, I grew up on a beef cattle ranch in Montana. My father's family are still farmers. My mother's family were ranchers. But my father passed away when I was fairly young in third grade. So we then worked more with my mother's family. And hence, I've been involved with livestock rather than farming. And developed a strong love for farm animals, but also gave me the opportunity to work outside and develop several traits that have served me well in leadership. Work till the job's done, problem solve, think out of the box, you know, work to your ability. And I have been able to use those in the different roles that I've done. Because of working on a ranch, my goal for my career was to be a veterinarian, but when I went to Montana State as a freshman, it was also the first time really to get away from home and didn't focus on my schoolwork quite as much as I should have. And therefore, my grades as a freshman were not particularly good. And that really did close the door of moving on to veterinary school, as I thought I wanted. But that was okay. I stayed in the curriculum of pre-vet and continued to take sciences and math. And when I was a junior in college, I started taking genetics classes. And I really liked the combination of biological sciences and math. And that happens in genetics. And so I went to one of my genetics professors and I said, so what would I do if I got a degree in genetics? And he said, well, you could become like me. And I said, oh, a teacher at a university. And I remember he was actually a little bit hurt that I didn't realize he had this other world of research. And so he said, well, no, you would also do research. And that was actually the first that I knew that faculty didn't just teach in the classroom. We didn't have opportunities for undergraduate research or, you know, shadowing faculty outside the classroom. So he helped me understand a little more of what graduate school would be, and helped me apply. And it's kind of interesting because as life happens, actually some of the places and the faculty, the professors that I applied to for grad school, I actually have met later on. And a couple of them had said, darn, I should have snatched you up as a grad student. But I ended up at Oregon State and went to grad school, master's, PhD, met my husband there. And then after we finished that, I did a postdoc, which is after you've done your PhD, rather than taking on your own laboratory, you go and work with another researcher. And the USDA has a very large research program for animal science. And the program was in Nebraska. And my husband and I moved there. And I worked up and became a research scientist with USDA. Loved the research opportunity, and tested animals for genetics influencing disease traits, both through looking at large data sets, but also looking at the DNA and identifying genes and mutations that would predict whether an animal had good disease resistance or not. At that time, the group that I work with, I actually work with beef cattle. But when I came to Utah State, the beef cattle were assigned to nutrition projects. And so they said, well, it's going to be difficult for you to work with the beef cattle, but we have a sheep walk if you would like to work with sheep. And so I said, well, are you sure? Because with genetics, I need to be able to select certain animals and set up the matings that I need, et cetera. And so the sheep walk then moved me into 30 years of being involved with sheep genomics. I still do stay engaged. I'm a co-PI on a USDA grant right now, looking at, again, different parts of the sheep genetics, sheep genome that influence traits. And we still do a few projects here at USU. So try to keep that coming. But the research world and the research process has also helped me in leadership. And that is, you know, get data, develop objectives, do background searches on what's been done, and then, you know, put it all together to come up with the right direction forward. And particularly with COVID, I've noticed my research background has really, really helped me.
That's cool. I was just going to ask, how did a research background take you to the level of a president of a university?
Well, I think it's the combination, really, of what I learned through hard work, problem solving, et cetera, and then learning how to analyze, be analytical. And I think those two things coming together have really helped me. So I came as a beginning faculty member in the Department of Animal, Dairy, and Veterinary Sciences and started doing research. I actually was on an appointment that was 75% research, and I only taught one class a year and then team taught another class. But I started having students, undergrads and grad students help me in the lab. And we had some really great successes during that time, and really loved working with the students, which had not been possible when I was at USDA, not to the extent being on a campus allows me. So then I was asked to do my first administrative role. It was actually interim dean of the graduate school. And I was just intrigued. I thought, yeah, sure, it sounds like fun. But I, instead of shifting to that role, I added it on, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. So the first semester, I actually was still teaching. I was still doing research, and I was pregnant with my daughter and was interim dean of grad school. So by the second semester, I actually said that I needed to not teach. And unfortunately, I've not taught since then. So that was 2000. I've missed it. I think, you know, I like to pride myself that I was a pretty good teacher, and certainly missed being in the classroom, because it really does stimulate our faculty, keeps them current, keeps them questioning. A lot of energy can come through the classroom.
Yeah, it does. That's one thing I've really missed through this whole ordeal, is not being in that classroom setting. It's something different than just going on an online class. It really does have just that energy of learning. So,
but we will get back there. I'm certain of it.
I'm very excited.
Maybe even, you know, as promising as the vaccine is, and I think widespread testing, you know, there could be more opportunities this coming fall semester.
That's what I'm hoping for too. I'm really excited. So with all of that coming to a head with your pregnancy, being the dean, that's a lot of responsibility and a lot of probably stress, I'm assuming.
You know, I get stressed about issues, right? So it's one of the tips or one of the things that I've used, and that is, it's just a simple thing. Don't push a solution before you're ready. Mm-hmm. And that came from watching my own stress level. And so I would be in this role of having to make a decision, and I would start getting, I get headaches. And that stress, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What's the right decision? And then I realized, well, you know what? I don't know what the right decision is yet. So let's set it aside and it will come to me. And I always use a term, two terms, fitting the pieces of a puzzle together, and then that light bulb moment. So to me, what I've learned for leadership is I have to get the right puzzle pieces, and then I have to put them in the right spot. And then you have that light bulb moment. Oh, there's that solution. There's how I need to go forward. That's the way we need to go. So what I'm seeing is I was pushing the solution. I have to find the solution. I have to have that answer. But all those pieces weren't there. And I didn't have it. So I've learned, you know, I can't, like, sometimes people are like, can you make the decision today? No, guess what? I can't.
Yeah.
I say that. Nope, not quite there. We need a little more time, a little more input, a little more information. And then it just feels right. So really, I've really learned to listen to myself and know when I'm not ready to make that decision or make that move.
Wow. That is something that a lot of leaders, especially for me, as I try to keep those boundaries. I try to say, no, give me a couple minutes and I'll think it through and I'll get that solution to you. How do you keep that boundary when there's pressure?
Just say it. Just say it. Yeah. You know, I think all of us have gone, probably many of us, let's say many of us, not all of us, have gone through a point in our lives where you might be in a class or you might be at a presentation and you want to ask a question or you want to make a comment and you think, oh my gosh, you know, that might not be right or it might not make sense or maybe nobody else is even thinking that way. And then somebody else asks that question or makes that comment, the speaker goes, oh, what an excellent point, or what an excellent question. And you want to say, wait a minute, I was thinking of that myself. And so there's that moment where you have to decide, I'm gonna take that chance. I'm gonna ask that question. I'm gonna make that comment. And it gets easier and easier and easier over time. And what I have to learn now is to not always comment and to not always ask the question. Like, I'm a little too confident to share my input. So one thing that I've tried to do, even in Zoom, you can do this, and that is watch body language. And, as you know, like at a meeting or in a presentation or whatever, and watch that person who wants to make a comment or wants to ask a question. They'll lean forward, they'll fidget a little, they'll actually make eye contact with you, and just, but help them. Say, did you have a question for me? Ask them very directly. Or do you have something you wanted to share with us? All right, now they're stuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you can say, wow, that's great. Thank you so much. And it helps them do it that next time and the next time and the next time. So as far as leadership development, I like to do that, make sure that everybody has a chance to talk. And I've actually stopped other people from dominating. I'd say, okay, let's see. I am a big traffic cop person. I hold up my hand. Okay, thanks. Let's see what other people have to share. So I hope you take that for yourself as offering that opinion or asking that question, even though you're not quite sure. I mean, I've never thought, wow, that was weird. I've never ever thought that.
Mm-hmm.
So don't let yourself hold back on that.
Oh, that's some good advice. Thank you. Especially when it comes to my podcast in general. I'm like, do I ask that question now? Or do I send that email?
You have to trust your instincts. I think too often we question it, you know? And I mean, even if it is ill-timed, you can tell, like the person's like, oh, I hadn't thought of that or whatever. But I mean, as an interviewer, like, you want to get us to think outside the box. You want to sort of, you know, get us to redirect and reflect. So
thank you for that. That really does help me for this interview as well as like multiple other interviews. Great. So I'll just keep going and asking you.
Yeah, follow
your
instinct.
So with all of these leadership qualities you've picked up through this position that you've been holding now, what is one thing that extremely influenced you into getting into that position of being the president of a university?
So this is, I get asked that a lot, you know, did you always plan to be a president? Heck no, I did not. I absolutely did not. So when I did the grad school, I kept telling myself, but I can still keep the research going. I love research, and I actually was good at it, right? I mean, I threw in all my energy of being present into my research. And I kept telling myself, well, I can do it both. And I did for a while. Then after dean of the grad school, I actually became dean of the College of Agriculture in like 2002, which is a long, long time ago. And again, I could keep both things going. I have a research tech that's been with me since I came to USU and for 30 years. So if you can imagine, you know, just my right-hand person, 30 years. And we just had a great time, and we shared, she knew what I was thinking, I knew what to tell her, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But then more and more and more came into my responsibilities, and I had less and less time to do research. So you don't want to have regrets in your life, right? I call them forks in the road. And you take a fork, not really knowing how much that could or may change the direction of your life. I mean, you know, choosing to go to Oregon State, wow, that was, I mean, and let me meet my husband. And then through that, I ended up, that moved me into the next direction. Likewise, being the agreeing to be interim dean of the grad school. At the moment, I just thought, well, it'll be fun to try. I didn't realize that that would direct me and move me more and more and more into administration and less into research, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we need to reflect deeply on all those forks in the road. They are just what they are. Some are bigger, some are better marked, and some clearer where you're going if you take that fork. Sometimes they just are what they are. So anyway, I started doing administration, and it really wasn't until my very last previous job, which was provost under the last president, Stan Albrecht. And, he had been president, I think it was 12 years. And he started kind of talking about retiring. And I'm like, no, Stan, keep going. Because I loved what I was doing. I loved being provost. It was working really directly with the deans. We were doing a lot of initiatives with student retention and graduation and all of that. I'm like, just keep going, Stan, keep going. Well, he got more and more thinking that he would step down. And then he started saying, well, Noelle, you should throw your hat in the ring. And I'm like, I don't know. It doesn't look like that's the job for me. I just didn't see it. And it really wasn't until I did my application that I really truly thought of what it would be like to be president. And I started thinking, I would really like to implement some of the things that I thought of. I really would like an opportunity to implement those at Utah State. So it really, as crazy as it sounds, I did not really envision or plan to be president until I was applying for the job. I loved every job I've had. I leave those jobs usually fairly reluctantly, want to keep doing more. So it wasn't like I had my eye on that and I was just watching all the time. That's not the way everyone does. Some people have said that, someday I would like to be a president of a university. And so they choose those forks to take them in the direction. Mine was much more serendipity, which appears to have also worked.
Yeah. That's fun. There definitely have been a couple forks in the road that I end up taking. I'm like, oh, that was a great decision.
Okay, yeah, that's how now it was. I'm doing this.
Yeah exactly. That's how it was coming to Utah State.
I'm sure it was one of the forks.
Yep, that one was kind of serendipitous as well. I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, I got some scholarships. I'll go. And I've loved it. It's been one of the best, some of the best years of my life. So
great. Yeah. That's great. So, regrets. Do I have any regrets? Well, I have questions. I wonder what my research career would have been if I hadn't gone into administration as soon as I had. Now, I suspect I always would have gone into administration because I do have kind of a control issue. I love to be in control. And so I think, but if I had started later, I might not have had the chance to be president. So I don't know, but always kind of, there's a couple of research projects that I wish I could have solved. And I haven't yet, maybe someday, but yeah.
It's fun. It's fun to talk to you about these kinds of things.
Could I talk a little bit about my family? Because you said, you were pregnant, whatever. So you have to have some confidence, I guess, to do this. And not everybody can. But, I understand myself and what I can do. So I actually took my son when he was born. I was a faculty member. I took him to work until he was about 5 months of age. And And then finally one day, this is a terrible story, I actually realized that I did need to put him in daycare because it was in those days they had those walkers. Now they don't have them because they tip over or they fall downstairs or whatever, and they're considered not safe. So mm-hmm. instead you have those saucer things. But this was a walker, and so he could wheel around. One time, like, he's wheeling around because he's 5 months old. Mm-hmm. And I hear, "Mama, mama, mama." And I realize I can't find him. And he had actually wheeled himself over into an empty office and had gotten wedged behind a bookshelf. Couldn't get out. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe we need to do a little bit different. So then I got him daycare. My daughter, I kept her while I was dean of the grad school until she was 3 months. And I had a swing and I had, stuff, you know, and she would sleep. And then because this was my second child, I kind of knew that point where I wasn't going to get as much time, like she wasn't going to sleep as much. She was going to need more care. So I was a little more sensitive to when I needed to get daycare. But, you know, people pitched in and, you know, it's just life. And I've never, you know, like my family is part of my life. And if I had to separate it, I'm not sure I would have been as happy. Mm-hmm. And so academics does seem a little bit more open on that. I never asked. but I actually, there's a couple of faculty members that we have now at USU that were grad students then. And one of them told me one time, she said, "You were so inspiring because you did that." I thought, wow, I didn't even know I was inspiring.
Yeah, you're like, I'm just taking care of my kids.
Yeah, exactly. Juggling. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you been able to have the amount of time that you've hoped for as you're in the position as president with your family?
Well, again, it's making them part of it. So, you know, I bring the kids when they want to events, not everything, but like, especially when I was a researcher and I had the opportunity to travel, especially internationally, like Vietnam and China and Australia and New Zealand, I would take my family, and they've gone to events and, but you know, they don't really, that's not really their, shall we say, cup of tea always. They do like the sporting events and they like to go to those, but dinners, sometimes performances, like I can convince them to go to theater or a concert or something like that. And so, you know, having them part. One other really, I hadn't realized that my husband has a bachelor's in science and then he has a master's in technical education, tech ed. And he was a science teacher and then became a principal for 14 years. And about, I think he's been with us maybe 4 years. He actually came to Utah State and is the IT director for the College of Education and Human Services. And he's an associate vice president of advancement. Well, it is so handy having him as part of the university because, you know, we actually trade off on events or things like sometimes he'll do an event and I'll do another event. That was pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. And now he is very, very involved in the student COVID testing lab. He actually has pretty much, he is the lead organizer for the testing lab over at the TSC Ballroom. And he and two people are going down to Eastern, USU Eastern and Price and Blandy this week to set their testing center up. So yeah, it's been nice
to
have
position.
Him. Yeah, it's been really nice to have him part here at USU.
Yeah, you definitely stay in the loop with those things.
yeah.
That's so interesting. I'm really glad to hear that you're able to still have family life while in these types of positions. Sometimes It's something that a lot of women think about. They have to decide whether they want to have a family or they want to have positions that are higher up. And it's have good to
both.
See.
Absolutely, yeah. Have them both. You know, if it's a job you can't do, you can't have your family be part of, I mean, you'd have to ask yourself, is that then a job I want? That's the question. Do I want to keep those separate? I go to work, I do work, I come home, I'm family. Or do you want a more of a meld on that? And there will be jobs that can do both ways. You know, here in Utah, there were moments that I tried to feel guilty, right? Like I'm at work and my child's at daycare. Well, it wasn't daycare. I chose a family. And, you know, my kids were just, they called them their day family, which was great. That worked great for me. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I feel, oh gosh, you know, I'm not taking them to athletics and I'm not, you know, taking them to piano and I'm taking them to dance, my husband said. And you think the kids would have liked that?
Yeah.
Well, no, but I should feel guilty I didn't do that. And same with academics, you know. Oh man, I should be home, you know, helping them do their homework. Really? Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't, I guess the thing is, don't throw guilt on ourselves. It is what it is. And that isn't what shapes your child, you know, how much time you spend with them. It's, you know, that quality and the principles you give them and the, you know, that's where it, you know, you can spend a lot of time with somebody, but it may not be quality.
That's the
so
truth.
You got to do it. You got to make it, you know, you've got to make that decision yourself. I don't think there's a right or wrong for anybody.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to switch positions a little bit. I asked a question to a couple of people. I was like, if you could talk to President Cockett, what would you ask her? And some of them said, what does your morning routine look like?
Well, so what is my morning routine like? I love to sleep in the morning. So I'm not one to jump out of bed at like 5 and get everything organized. I'm like, I look over the clock. Oh, I could sleep for 10 more minutes. I do. So that always rushes me, which I hate. So sleep until I absolutely have to get up, but I do have a cup of coffee in bed, read my emails, figure out what's happening for the day. That then determines what I'm going to wear for the day. That's great. That sounds right. And, so I think about what I'm going to wear. I have a sister who actually organizes her entire week's outfits. I'm like, how do you do that? How do you know what you're doing during the day? How are you inspired to wear that particular outfit? So anyway, then have my cup of coffee, read my emails, check my schedule. Then at this point now, I'm pushing the envelope on being late. So I have to leap out of bed and run into the shower and take my shower and fix my hair and get my makeup on. And then now COVID raced into my office where I am right now here at home and turn on the Zoom. Otherwise, I would jump in my car and race in my car up to Old Main. And I have quite a few speeding tickets. Let's just put it that way. I push time right to the edge, just even as you saw, you know, one more minute, one more email, one more sentence. That's a bad habit. I've actually been told, you know, the one thing you need to change is try to be on time. That's tough. It's tough. It's not, I mean, I'm not like sitting here reading a novel.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, seriously, it's one more thing, one more. Now, relaxing. Everybody has to relax. I don't watch TV ever. I just don't. I garden. And I read, but, you know, and garden, like I was out this weekend in the snow gardening, right? I love being outside. That comes again from growing up on a ranch.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm raking leaves and whatever. I get exercise plus I'm outside. So try to get outside as much.
I've noticed that. Yeah. Especially with COVID, I've noticed that I started growing like succulents, some plants.
Oh my gosh, fantastic.
Yeah, through this COVID, I was able to, silver lining of COVID is I found out how much I adore plants.
Good. That's
yeah, but I
how
think
often
it does.
Do you water your succulents?
Oh.
Somebody gave me one and I'm like, you know, they're like, well, you're a gardener, you'll figure it out.
You'll figure it out. With the succulents, I read a lot because my first one started getting root rot and yeah. I took it to my friend. He fixed it up. I didn't have a hole in the bottom of the plant.
Pot,
and so it was rotting. I was also overwatering it because I didn't realize you never water them, basically.
Truly. You truly don't. Okay.
Yeah. I have found if I put them in succulent soil, once the soil is dry, you can water them again. Some of them stay wet for a really long time.
Okay. So. All right. Well, that's what you do with a houseplant, but I guess, you know, you use different soil for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's a little bit more lighter. It's lighter, softer soil is what I've seen. So, yeah. So I try to not water them until like a week and a half. But then I have one that's a normal plant, and so that one gets a little bit neglected. But with reading, what's the formative book that you've read lately?
Oh, I don't read formative books. Let me look around here. Doug Anderson, Dean of the College of Business, is really super about giving me great books to read, like Gail Miller's book. I read Crystal Meglett's book, you know, because their books, they tell a lot about just their story, which I love. And then, you know, just, you know, seeing how they solve problems or handled family issues or whatever. So biographies of women.
Oh, I love that. That's so cool. That's what I found too. I have stacks and stacks of self-help books. And then I turn to the novels and I'm like, yes, there we go.
Yeah.
That's funny. I have a couple more questions for you. One that came in was, what is your most recent aha moment?
Oh, man, those a lot. The testing. So we were asked to do the student weekly testing to identify people who would not realize they might be positive for COVID, and they're called asymptomatic. So we've done, gosh, we've tested since Wednesday. We're probably going to have about 5,000 people tested. Well, there are not many people who really truly can say, I didn't know I was sick. We're thinking it's like 0.1%. So of the 4,000, like 4 truly had no symptoms of illness. It's about 1% that didn't think they had COVID, but they might have had a runny nose, they might have had a sore throat. They might have had a headache. And so I think the aha moment is, you know, when you're just not feeling good, if you have access, go get a COVID test. And if it's positive, then you can self-isolate, you can protect those around. If not, you can say, okay, it must just be a regular headache. So after realizing that, I've had headaches, right? You know, because of all the, you know, things that I'm maybe trying to solve before I'm ready.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I went and got a test. It was negative. So, but I That's feel good. A lot better, right? Because I don't want to be walking. Well, it's not like I'm out in crowds necessarily, but, you know, it's a peace of mind. So the aha moment was, it's not everybody has the classic COVID symptoms.
Yeah, that is true. That's what I've been seeing with my friends as well. Some of them have been coming back positive and they're like, I didn't even know. Thought it was a runny nose.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's good. Good, good. Yeah. Confirmed that for me.
Yep. I actually had my boyfriend's roommate just tested positive through one of those on Thursday or Friday. So
good. Not good that he's positive. Good that you guys
should be found it.
All right, so aggiehealth.usu.edu, that's how you register. It takes literally 4 minutes.
Yep.
Well, I'm so proud that USU has been able, like, it's just volunteers and we've all learned our jobs. And
yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, I'll just ask the last two questions that I have for everyone. My first is, what would you tell your younger self?
Life goes by super, super fast. So really enjoy everything, even enjoy, you know, the downtimes. Live it, because, you know, I mean, I'm as old now as my grandmother was when we used to work on the ranch. And she, you know, I mean, days were harsher than she, you know, and whatever, but I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm as old as my grandma. Like, it's just like, oh my gosh, where did life go? And that's it, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just trotting right along. So, I mean, I think I always did enjoy life, but I maybe was a little too determined what that next fork was, what that next step was, you know, like, I got to be doing this. I've got to be, you know, moving on. Shoot, enjoy what it is. It, you know, it still happens. It still happens. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, as they say, stop and smell the roses a lot.
Yeah. That is something I needed to hear, especially I'm graduating this spring. And so I'm already in the spot where I'm like, okay, I need to get these applications out. I need to do this resume. And just thinking ahead and like feeling like I'm already in the spring with where my decisions are and trying to plan for the forks in the road, but just stepping back for a second is what I need to do.
Yeah, you do. And take those little times. You've got to. Again, it's, yeah, I call it, you know, I said it was work family balance, but work is just part of your life. You know, my mother used to always, you know, she had been pretty driven. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you got to enjoy what you're doing the whole time. You don't want to just save your special moments, like that rare time. You got to enjoy work. You got to enjoy the resume. You got to enjoy, you know, that part too. So yeah, stop and smell the roses a lot.
Oh my goodness. Thank you. That is so needed from a college age perspective. Definitely. Oh man. Yeah, it gets hard when you're just always thinking like, oh, what am I going to do after college? And everyone's asking you, what are you going to do?
Well, here's something. You know what I learned with COVID? I can't predict beyond tomorrow, truly, seriously. You know, I remember when we finished up spring and like we had to cancel graduation. I was certain that by the end of the summer, this would all be gone, right? We all thought that, you know, June, huh? It'll be gone. It'll be beautiful weather. It'll be something in the spring. And then all of a sudden, one day I realized we are not going to be able to do that graduation ceremony that I told everybody we were going to do in August. And I actually, you know, it was really a hard thing to realize, you know. There was an aha moment. Oh, we probably can't bring another 5,000 people and mix them with our freshmen. Mm-hmm. And then another one, I had said, we're starting football. The football players are back. Mm-hmm. And then we canceled the season. And I realized I can only see what happens tomorrow with confidence. I can talk about what's going to happen in the future. And I can start thinking of what it's like. But truly predicting, I can only do tomorrow. So, you know, I know that's what it feels like. I have to have my next step figured out, but you know, you don't really. I actually was offered a faculty job at Oklahoma State. And my husband and I didn't really want to go live in Oklahoma. And then one day somebody from USDA called me up and said, I had already worked with them when I was in my PhD program. And they said, you know what, we have this opening. Do you want to come? And I thought, oh my gosh, that's perfect. That's great. I can focus on research and, you know, it's a temporary job and this is perfect. So, you know, you can worry about what that is, but then, you know, like things pop up and they actually turn out to be the better solution than all of what you were thinking months ahead. So it kind of comes back, don't force the solution. Let it come to you. Huh. I mean, don't not work on what your next step is, but you know, it'll come and you'll know. Sometimes people say, I don't even know if I should try for that job. And I say, try and get it and then decide. And you'll know, ooh, you know what? I don't think I really want that job. All right, then don't take it. Yeah. Or I want that, you know, but, you know, to decide even before you try for it, that's, I don't know. Don't decide at that point.
Ooh, that's good. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you so much for coming on.
All right. Well, Sierra, I hope I meet you in person. And if you ever see me, pop up to me and say, hey, we did a podcast.
Okay. Sounds good. All I'll right. do that.
All right. Well, have a great day. Smell the roses.
Oh. Thank you. I will.
Okay. Bye.
Hey, it's Sierra, and I hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope it led you to a more positive mindset, a more defined view of leadership, and some action items to take along with you. For more information, you can check out the Moxie website at themoxiemindset.org. Thanks for tuning in today, and I'll see you next week on The Moxie Mindset.